Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Motorcycling Australia Women in Motorcycling interview. I'm Gemma Wilson, and we are here today with Amy Harberg. Amy is a wonderful adventure rider. We haven't had an adventure rider yet on our show, which is really cool. So thank you so much for joining us, Amy.
Oh, thank you so much, Gemma, and the Women in Motorcycling Committee for having me. Privileged. Thank you.
Fantastic. Amy and I have had a little chat off screen already, and we have so much to talk about. This is going to be a really exciting episode. Amy's done so much around Australia and around the world. And adventure riding is really one of those things that anyone can get into because you don't have to have that competitive bone. Like it's out there, it's having fun, it's adventure. So if you're at all a little bit adventurous, really listen in and you'll find some ways to get into some adventure riding, I'm sure. Little side note, I've been sick. So if I duck off screen, I'm blowing my nose or I'm having a big cough, and I'm really sorry about that. But Amy's about to head off on a 6-day kayak trip. So this was our window and we had to take it. So let's hear from Amy. Tell us why you love adventure riding so much and how you got into it.
Okay, so I love adventure riding for a few reasons. Like it's this great ability to go off and be incredibly independent. You don't need much to go do it. You just kind of just go start it. It's easy. And the people are great. Like I have met my best friends through adventure riding and really kind of shaped as a later adult who I've become. So how did I get into it? It was actually pretty simple. I didn't even have a motorbike license. And one day my friend from work said, "Hey, I've been thinking about getting my motorbike license." I was like, "Me too. Let's do that." So we literally went off and got our motorbike licenses like the next weekend. 3 days after that, I bought my first adventure bike. I just kind of went and did it. And 2 days later, I went up into the hills behind where I lived, which was in the Hunter Valley, and got very, very lost. And it was the best ride I think I've ever had because I was so lost and it all went pear-shaped, but I got out of it and it was great fun. So that's how I kind of got into it.
Cool. And so how long ago was that? How long have you been adventure riding?
In the scheme of things, not very long. I've kind of only been riding about 15 to maybe 17 years. So I didn't even really get into it until I was sort of early to mid-30s is when I really started riding. I could ride a dirt bike before that. My family are really anti-motorbikes. So it wasn't something I was encouraged to do as a kid. But I knew how to ride one.
Yep. And so that 15, 17 years ago, you went and got your bike license on kind of a whim and then went out the back of the Hunter Valley and got lost.
Yep.
Where did you go from there? Like, tell us the next couple steps.
I was probably a bit lucky. I met this guy who also I worked with, and he was an adventure rider. So we started going, further afield, like just day rides and weekend rides and stuff like that. So I sort of started, learning the tracks around Hunter Valley and sort of gathering those skills as a rider. Then I sort of progressed up to a motorbike. So my next step up was to a F800 GS. From there, I kind of figured I didn't really know how to ride at that point. So lots of lessons. So the BMW Off-Road Training School. I did some trials courses as well. I think that was pretty important. I love trials. I'd like to get into pure trials at the moment. That's sort of the thing I'd like to do. Such great skill sets for what we do. And then started riding with Ride Aid, which is now Ride Aid EV, Greg Yeager, that group. I did a lot of riding with those guys, like every weekend with those guys. I also then started doing a lot of the BMW GS Safaris. I think I did something like 7 in 5 years. And when they moved from just a normal safari into the enduro safari, I kind of moved with that as well, and I got a little bit more of an enduro style BMW, which happens to be this old obscure model called a 650 Cross Challenge. So I just, my bikes morphed with the style of riding that I was doing, a little bit more harder enduro, the lighter, more enduro bikes. That's kind of how I progress through the sport, I guess. But yeah, adventure, just weekend adventure riding. Really?
Yeah, it sounds like you really jam-packed a lot into the first few years. And so, yeah, went from newbie to not a newbie anymore pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's right. I also then started tackling some bigger things. So the APC Rally, Australian Property Centre Rally. The first one I did was a 14-day, 14 days? Yeah, 14-day rally. You know, so it encompasses a fair amount of Australia. So it's kind of where I got the skill of what to pack and how to look after the bike and that mindset of going for a long, long time, day after day after day. Mm-hmm. So I've done two of those actually since.
Okay, cool. Yeah, my next question was going to be, do you remember the first sort of like unsupported on your own or with just a couple other people event that you went on or like ride that you went on and, yeah, how you knew what to pack and how you kind of, yeah, got over that first hurdle of doing it for the first time?
So I guess this isn't an unsupported ride, but the first safari, BMW safari I did, I didn't know anyone. I didn't know what to expect. I literally just signed up to it and I think it was starting out at Broken Hill. I just rode out there on my own and rocked up like, oh, hi everyone, I'm here, what do we do? I didn't really know what to take. I think I took bikinis for crying out loud. Hanging out by the pool. How wrong I was. So that was a supported ride. So after that, you kind of, but oh, look, before that, I was doing weekend away camping trips with friends. Learning what to take is something you just look at. You ride with people who are better than you and, you know, you have a look at their kit and you think, oh, look, could that work for me? You touch it, you feel it, you ask them to try it out, you know, sit in that chair or have a look at that tent. Tools, you learn what works for you. I mean, you know, like not... We all have our own techniques for changing tyres or fixing tyres. So what works for you is kind of trial and error, really.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's really cool. So within Australia, you've done a lot of riding. You've done lots of safaris. You've done some training courses. You've also helped out at some BMW training courses, I believe.
Yeah, I was really lucky enough a couple of times to be able to help out Chris and Shane at some ladies only training. So I'm not, for the record, I am not a Australian BMW instructor. I'm not. I do happen to have an overseas qualification, but that doesn't stand for anything here in Australia. So I just was able to assist them. The great part of that was it was about teaching ladies. And I think sometimes we learn a little bit differently, particularly too when we're looking at such big bikes like the 1200 GS. They can kind of be a little bit daunting. And so it's technique. I mean, you know, it's everything's technique. And once you sort of crack some of those techniques, the size of the bike then doesn't really matter, because if you can, you know, you're a little less daunted by it all. And I absolutely love seeing ladies progress through that. You know, like a great example is Kate Peck. She didn't think she could pick up a 1200 GS and it's all about technique, and she did it really easily. So it was, that was just a bit of fun, but it was great to see. And we see that every time with the ladies.
Yeah. Do you find too that if it's a ladies only course and the instructors and assistants are all male, sometimes women can be like, well, yeah, you're doing it, but you're a dude. But if they see a female doing it, they're like, oh, she can do it, I can do it. And then they're more willing to give it a try.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I still do get it. I do some rides with Ride ADB now on some of their ladies only courses again as well. And again, I'm not an instructor, but sometimes we'll just do a bit of cornering techniques or, you know, help go through some stuff that might just help the ladies. And, you know, the male instructors who are there are amazing instructors, but then they say, let's see Amy do it because she's our size. You know, she's not 7 foot tall and muscle bound. So that happens a lot. I think that's why it's really valuable actually to have a female instructor in their crew and yeah, a lot of female instructors out there like yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So you've done all that writing in Australia. What about overseas? I believe you've done a lot overseas. Like, where do we start, really? Pick a point and let's go through everything you've done overseas.
So I guess the first thing I did overseas was I had the opportunity to try out for this competition called the BMW GS Trophy. So a lot of people in Australia have no idea what the BMW GS Trophy is, and for good reason. It was very much an overseas competition. So every 2 years, BMW run this competition. Every country puts forward their three best riders. So a team is three riders plus a journalist, which their scores don't necessarily count to the team in all aspects. Usually there's about 20 teams, so 20 countries across the world put teams in, and it's held all over the world. So it's been in South Africa, it's been in Europe, it's been in Canada. The most recent one was in Mongolia. So BMW, it wasn't a male-only event. It was just that females hadn't qualified for it, because it was really, when I first did it, it was a really physical event, really physical. So BMW wanted to include women, so they said, well, you know what, we'll put together a female-only team. So they just put a call out worldwide. Any lady who wanted to enter could. All you had to do was put together a video showing why you wanted to be involved, your passion for BMW GSs, and you had to obviously show your riding. BMW Australia actually got in contact with me and said, well, we'd like to see you try. So after completely panicking, like just in this state of, oh my God, I can't do this, I finally pulled myself together and got a little bit of help to do the video. Got the video in there, and lo and behold, I got selected to the top 10. So that was out of, I think, 120 women worldwide who applied. So that took me to South Africa. That was my first overseas trip to Country Tracks. There's a big BMW training facility in South Africa called Country Tracks. And there I met the other 10 girls from around the world. And for 3 days, three solid days of competition. And it wasn't just like do a little competition, just sit and wait. It was three full days of riding. Like, so if you weren't actually doing a special test, they were making you ride up around the hill. So it was all about making you fatigued as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lo and behold, at the end of that, I came second overall. So I made the team. The lead girl was an incredible woman. Actually, you possibly know of her, Stéphanie Bourson, from France. She's a French enduro champion, won 6 day many, many times.
I don't know.
Okay. She's been out of it a little while. She's got two beautiful children and sort of that part of life. But she still trains with one of the French national teams. Don't know. That's all I can tell you, unfortunately.
When I started racing enduro, it was Ludovine Pugh was like the girl to beat, and she was French and she just smoked us by so much. There was a French girl before her that was good as well. I didn't know that. I should do a bit of research.
I got smoked by Stéphanie, trust me. And then the other girl was a South African girl called Morag Campbell. So yeah, we managed to become this team, and then from there we actually went to the GS Trophy, which is in Thailand. In between that, I got to go to South Africa for another training session. So I was back over to South Africa for a couple of weeks training, and then back to Australia, training. I'm pretty sure that's all I did for about 4 months, was just train. I did a fair bit of work with Chris Birch, like one-on-one stuff with Chris Birch. The BMW instructors, but just, working on the basics, like literally I'd spend hours just doing full lock turns, figure eight full lock turns on a 1200, learning to jump, pop that thing over little logs, which I'm still really rubbish at, but I can get it over. then off to Thailand for the actual competition. That was full on. It was really full on, but amazing, really amazing. And, By no means do I consider myself some international level rider. I'm just not. I just some Australian chick that rides. But because we had Stephanie in our team, and she was amazing, and we'd be pretty close together, so the team would go through all the obstacles together. And you'd see Stephanie, you'd see how she would weight the bike or preload or do something, or, you know, gas it on a particular point. And you would have that split second to sort of see that and go, shit, that's what I need to do. And so you'd kind of copy her. So when you're riding with people who are really good and you have that ability just to watch them and copy them, you get better really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So then Thailand. And, look, you know, we didn't do particularly brilliantly in the standings, but, gee, we did better than we thought. And the experience was amazing. What was amazing was all the teams. So everyone else was guys, right? So all the other competitors were guys. They were cheering for us so much. All they wanted for us was to be there with them. It's a beautiful example of, you know, how inclusive the sport can be and how willing guys are to have a lot of females and see them do really well in the sport. It was great.
That's awesome. And so that was 2016?
Yeah.
Cool. And so how many hours and how many Ks a day sort of are you riding on one of these GS?
On the trophy, it's 11 hours or so riding time a day.
Wow.
It's 5 days, I think. So the events are sort of technical time trialed events. So they might, then things like from a 50 meter slow race, how slow you can go to, in ours, we had to try and lift a 1200 GS over a log that was about my chest height from a dead stop.
Okay. So were you allowed to do that as a team, or you had to do it on your own, get your bike over the log?
No. It was a team. It was definitely a team. So there were four of us because we were allowed to use our journo for that one. But, yeah, it was hard. an example of that was in that one, the South African men's team did it in 9 seconds or something, or 7 seconds to lift this non-running 1200 GS up over a massive log. We did it in 13 seconds.
Okay.
So it's not like it takes you minutes and minutes and minutes more than the guys. It takes you that little bit because you're not 6 foot tall and, you know, weighing 130 kilos. But it's not that much more. And who cares? Hell, at the end of the day, we can say we lifted 1200 GS over a log in 13 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't care.
And it would have been an amazing experience to be on a team with two other women from two other countries like that and such different backgrounds and getting to know them and, like, their families and all that kind of stuff. Like, was that an amazing experience?
Absolutely. Stephanie didn't speak a word of English. I don't speak French. Yeah. Neither did Maura. So we had we also had a bit of communication, obstacles to get over. But it didn't seem to be a huge problem at the time. You're looking back and you think, oh, how do we do that? But, you know, the language of motorbikes, I guess.
Yeah, once the helmets are on.
Yeah. Go, go, go.
Yes. No. That's awesome.
Morag and I are still very good friends too. Sorry. Morag and I are still very, very good friends. And, it was pretty amazing getting to know girls from other countries.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And so you were telling me that you could only compete once in this event. So if you want to go back and do more, you have to become a marshal. So can you tell us about that and how, you wanted to do more? So you found a way to make it happen.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, the GS Trophy is this huge passion thing. You know, I got really swept up in the whole GS Trophy excitement, and going to the competition once was just not enough. I wanted more. And you're right, it's a customer event, so to stop one person or one team just constantly winning all the time, it's you can only be a competitor once. After that, if you want to go back to the event, you have to go back as a marshal. Now, the marshals lead the teams, because it's off, you're traveling via GPS. So the second event I went to was in Mongolia, and Mongolia is a pretty crazy place to try and navigate around. So if you were to send a couple of hundred people off across Mongolia, only 50 of them probably made the destination. So you have marshals that lead the teams. They also set up the special tests and sort of assist with the running of the event. There are a whole lot of journalists and media people that go to these things as well, so they have got to get to the events as well. So it's kind of managed by this whole team of marshals who are generally ex-competitors, but not always, but generally. To be a marshal, you actually have to be a BMW instructor. So I was lucky enough to go off to Germany to the BMW Off-Road Training Center at Hecklingen and become a German qualified BMW instructor, not Australian. I'm just going to be really clear about that because people ask me if I'm an instructor, and I'd love to say yes, but I'm just not in Australia for legal reasons.
Yeah.
I should appreciate that.
And so that martial experience then, how did it fare to being a competitor? Did they differ?
Yeah, they did. In one way it was harder because I suppose you have this expectation around your riding ability now. Mm-hmm. I'm always quite nervous, and my thoughts around my riding ability are probably a lot less than what they maybe are. I'm pretty hard on myself. So I felt a lot under a lot of pressure actually with being a marshal. I suppose with being a competitor, it's nerve-wracking because you don't know what you're coming up against. But you don't have to think that bigger picture. You just
the next ride. Thing.
Yeah, that's right. The next thing that's done. The next thing. Where being a marshal, you have to lead these teams. And Mongolia's, pretty sandy. Sand's not my best friend. So it was quite nerve-wracking. And there's just a lot more to it. In a way, your days are longer, because you have to go to a meeting. So we wouldn't get back to our tents until sort of 9, 10 o'clock at night. And then you're up at like 4 in the morning. So it was pretty fatiguing. But yeah. Amazing. Still an incredible experience. And one I'm incredibly grateful for.
And you can keep going back as a marshal?
Yeah, you can. Yep. Yeah, I didn't, you do have to get invited back, and I suppose to do that you've got to keep up your public, you've got to keep training people, you've got to keep going with that. I'm sure we'll get to it in a minute, but the Mongolian BMW trophy, I actually rode my own bike to it, and then I rode my bike to London. And then when I got back, I was a bit broke. So I kind of had to go back to my normal day job for quite a while and sort of set bikes aside for a bit. So I didn't kind of keep up the riding or keep up the public image or any of that. So the recent GS trophy, which was in New Zealand, I didn't get selected for.
Okay.
I know why. It's just I wasn't there in the sphere to do it.
Yeah. And I guess, has COVID interrupted all that stuff, or is it still happening overseas and we just can't go because we're Australian?
Yeah. So the last one, the 2020, I think it was the 2021, early 2021 was the last GS Trophy, and it was in New Zealand. They just snuck it in. Like, it was within weeks, and then the world started shutting down. The next trophy, I'm actually not sure where it is, and Australia hasn't been invited to compete. Oh, that was the other thing I forgot to mention. Australia never used to get invited to put a team in, like a national team in. But I don't want to say because of me, definitely not because of me, but maybe because of that experience of an Australian doing really well in the female team and bringing that sort of highlighting the fact that we've got this incredible base of riders here in Australia. That anyway, then they open it up for an Australian competition. And then on the back of that, we've now sent two Australian teams, so Mongolia and New Zealand, and we've also had a couple of other females go over.
Oh, cool.
And get in the teams too. It's not like we just go over and compete. Our girls get in the teams.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you just reminded them that Australia, we're here. We're down there, but we're here.
I think so. You can't hide your accent when you're over there. I think the Australian accent was definitely in their face for a little while.
Yeah. So our last adventure bike international thing that we need to talk about is your solo trip, your big ride. Yeah, so tell us about how that come about, where you rode from and to, and some of the highlights and lowlights potentially along the way.
Yeah. So I knew I was going to Mongolia for the GS Trophy. I'd worked tirelessly for 2 years to be selected as a marshal for that. I'd been selected. So I knew I was going. Around that same time, I was working with a filmmaker here in Australia called David Darcy from Motorcycle Adventure Dirt Bike TV. And we'd all come up with this idea when the 310 GS came out, and the whole, it's a small adventure bike. So it's a great potential entry level adventure bike for ladies who feel the bigger bikes are a bit daunting or are not sure. And yeah, it's nice placid little bike. So with a bit of assistance from BMW Australia, we bought two of these 310 GSs, and then with a company out of the UK called Rally Raid Products, they sponsored us to pretty much pimp out these 310s. I mean, we put amazing suspension on them. We gave them new wheels, did the flight deck, racks, rails, you name it, these bikes got the works. And then Adam Mitchinson from Rally Raid the UK came over, and we took these two bikes and flogged them for 7 days on an APC rally with the aim to break them. That was our goal, to see break these bikes. And we just couldn't. Adam was probably a bit better than I was, but and it was also, so it was around that same time, I started thinking I want to ride, do something big, and I knew I had this 310, so I had the opportunity to freight the bike to Far Eastern Russia, and the timing was just perfect that I could freight it to Russia, ride around Russia, and then back down into Mongolia in time to arrive when I needed to be at the GS Trophy. So I just kind of said yes to the opportunity, actually. And then everything started falling in place after that. It got really tight because we finished the APC rally, and then my bike had to be in Melbourne on the boat 2 days later. So between finishing the rally, servicing the bike, I literally put my bike on the back of my ute at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, drove through the night. I got to Melbourne, to Port of Melbourne, at about 10 a.m. in the morning. I hadn't packed anything. It was just shoved in packs, and put my bike in the container, and then I didn't see it for 3 months. And then went home and went, oh, I better figure out where I'm going and how I'm doing it. And I would like to say it was more planned than that, but it just wasn't. It was just, I agreed to the shipping date, and I figured everything else after that would work. So, yeah, then my bike got... So that's how we got onto being the 310, because it was purpose-built for long distance with the aid of Rally Raid Products and their amazing kit. And it just seemed like the right thing to right bike to do it on. I didn't want to take a big 1200 or something like that, because it's just too heavy. I wanted light. I wanted easy. I wanted basic, because I was riding solo. So, you know, I had to have... And I'm not that mechanically minded. In fact, I'm really not mechanically minded at all. So it has to be a pretty basic bike. And looking back in hindsight now, it was actually a perfect bike. It really was. It's, you know, it gets a lot of flack because it's made in India. I think India.
Yeah.
But it was that fact that it was made in India, and I suppose it's, tolerances are really broad. It's not a highly strung, you know, Austrian princess. It's a really easygoing kind of outback bike. So when I did get back into the back box of Tajikistan and fuel was fluorescent yellow and probably about 60, the bike just kept going.
Yeah.
So ironically, it was turned out to be a great bike for it. Yeah, yeah, things broke. Don't get me wrong. A lot of things broke on it. And some days I wanted more power. And but most of the time, adventure riding like that isn't about speed.
It's about getting there, hey?
Yeah, it's taking your time.
Yeah. And so then after Mongolia, then you kept going, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I had a small delay. So I got to Mongolia. I parked my little 310. I hopped on a 1200 with BMW. And so I was with BMW for, you know, over a month riding around Mongolia. And, you know, incredible. Got to ride through the middle of the Gobi Desert on a 1200 GS in sandstorms. It was amazing experience. Anyway, finished all that, got back, and because my personal bike had been in a container for 3 months, the fork seals were leaking. So I took it off to a local Mongolian mechanic to get it fixed. Long story short, I ended up getting attacked by his dog. And this thing latched on my arm, bit through my arm. And in Mongolia, rabies is endemic. So I've got these puncture marks where I can down see a couple of centimetres into my arm. This is the first day of my official, like, on my own travelling, and I've been bitten by a bloody dog. So I went to the hospital, and then to cut another long story short, I couldn't get the treatment I needed in Mongolia, so I had to go to China, sneak into Beijing to get it, and that was scary in itself and painful and expensive. And so top tip, if you're doing any traveling like this, buy the best travel insurance known to man.
Yeah.
You will need it. I mean, the dog bite all up cost me about $8,000, and I had to pretty much pay $6,000 of that before I got treated.
Ooh.
Yeah, so have some cash in reserves. Mm. But anyway, I got treated.
These things happen.
And then, and then I got back to Mongolia, and I had to get another heap of rabies shots along the way. So it became this great thing of, you know, which filthy hospital am I going to end up in today? I don't want to end up in a hospital in Mongolia, trust me. Oh. They are filthy. So yeah, then kept riding. You know, traveled some amazing places through Tajikistan. When I was looking at doing this trip, I knew there were dots. I kind of put a lot of dots on maps of where I wanted to see. And one of them was this very, very remote valley in Tajikistan called the Bartang Valley. You know, maybe 10, 15 people ride a motorbike or travel through that thing a year. And so I knew I had the sense that I didn't want to ride it solo. So it kind of depended that I had to meet up with some people to go do this. And not many people do it. Fortune fell upon me, and I met these lovely couple who were also on BMWs, and they wanted to go ride the Bartang. So we met up and we rode the Bartang. You know, the Bartang Valley is not technically that difficult, but the consequences were huge. Mm. So you know, if your bike breaks down, you're leaving that thing there. There's no way to recover. That's the thing. There's no way to recover your motorbike if you break something. So you had to really kind of look after your bike. And same if you broke your arm or something in there. Oh, I don't know. I don't know how you get out. It would be long. It would be terrible. So, yeah, and, you know, there are big drop-offs. You're riding next to raging rivers. You're riding literally through rivers most of the time, and then you have to get up onto this huge plateau and ride up there, and you're riding through meltwater, so icy meltwater. But, yeah, it was worth it every Amazing. Day of the week. Yeah, yeah, I'd go again. I'd go yeah. again tomorrow. Then kept going. I rode through the Wakhan Corridor, which is the border between Afghanistan and Tajikistan. That was, yeah, just amazing. People are so nice. People are so generous and so lovely through there. if I had to take home experience of that whole trip, it was how beautiful humanity can be. Right when you need them, or right when you don't think they're going to be. I mean, you know, it's wrapped up in some horrible, horrible stuff. And some travellers, not motorbike travellers, but some travellers actually were killed by some Taliban, only, you know, 5 kilometres from where I was at one stage. So you do have to have your wits about you. Mm-hmm. It's not all, you know, roses and butterflies. You've got to be smart about things. But still, yeah, the people were amazing.
Yeah.
And then from there, I went back into Russia, so Tajikistan, across to Uzbekistan first. So, yeah, went and not the popular side of the Aral Sea, but actually rode through what would have been the Aral Sea at one point. It's pretty amazing. Right across there, like through some of the ancient cities. I mean, we're talking cities that are BC cities. And then back into Russia and all around the Caspian Sea. So I opted to ride around the Caspian Sea rather than trying to get a tanker across the Caspian Sea, primarily because I wanted to eat caviar.
Yeah.
I rode thousands of kilometres just so I could eat real, real Russian caviar. It was worth it too. And then, through all the Baltics, so Croatia, Bosnia. And then before I left, I'd actually got in touch with, or some friends had got in touch with me in Italy about this race that was on Italy, and it kind of fitted in with my time frame, and it was called the Hard Alpi Tour. So I was kind of knew I had this time frame to get to the Hard Alpi Tour. The Hard Alpi Tour is a 24-hour endurance race. Now, I'm not part of the racing thing, you know, the front runners, they're racing it. I'm kind of just down the back having a bit of fun, but still you had to do it in 24 hours. So yeah, got to this event, and it was pretty full on, because it's, again, it wasn't technically all that hard. Yes, it was rocky in places, and yeah, it was the fatigue level about, you know, riding at 2 a.m. through till 2 a.m. But the crazy part was, like, you know, at that 2 a.m. when you're super fatigued, and you're on this little track, and you know you have a 3,000-metre drop right next to you. And it's this weird, just abyss of blackness there. that was interesting. That was good fun. And then eventually all the way to the UK, where I met up with John Mitchinson and Adam Mitchinson from Rally Raid Products, and they hosted me there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, cool.
To be honest, I was ready to come home. I was tired.
Yeah.
That was 6 months. 6 months on the road.
Yeah. That's amazing. That just sounds incredible. And like when you're telling the story about the dog bite and stuff, it's the lowlights that always turn into the best stories. And at the time you're like, oh my God. But then it's the thing that you're like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And you learn so much from when things go wrong, hey.
Yeah. And yeah, they don't adventure. If you plan everything, you go on a holiday and everything goes right, it's not really an adventure, it's a holiday. So I kind of love the unplanned stuff. The times when, and you know, look, there were days there where I'd been riding nonstop for like 14 hours a day for 3 days just to get somewhere, you know, or riding through a desert. And I spent a few days riding through the western blocks of Mongolia, not seeing a soul for days. I love that uncomfortableness. I love that that's where you find what you're made of.
That's so cool. Very, very, very cool. And so before we jump into, you know, who you are outside of bikes, and then we'll ask our 7 questions that we ask all the ladies, like where are you going with adventure riding from here? Like, is there more that you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go South America. Kinga Tanajeska, so for all the ladies out there thinking, oh, my God, how does she do that? Kinga's blog is on her bike, and she's we're very, very good friends before she left, and she is just my inspiration. And to be honest, I just followed her route across Mongolia and across that part with slight deviations. But she blogs it all, and she, it just, it, following her made it so doable. You know, it took a lot of that, well, where do you get fuel? What do you expect here? So if there's somebody who's thinking of doing this, it's not that hard. It's not that it hasn't been done before. Lots of girls do it. You just got to read and research. So from here, I would, once I sort of save up a bit more money, I'd like to definitely do some more. Here in Australia, I want to go up and do the Gibb River Road, which isn't too far from where I am now. I'm in far north Queensland. It's still a fair way, but yeah, I want to go to the Gibb River Road and then South America. But honestly, any country, go right again.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. Enzo, you kind of have already answered this a little bit, but I still want to ask it. When you were riding through all those crazy countries on your own, was there ever a time that you felt like, oh, this is dangerous? Like, have I bit off more than I can chew?
Yes. But not for any reasons of being a female.
Okay.
So not for that reason at all. I took roads I shouldn't have taken, ended up in places I shouldn't, and not dangerous places because I'm a girl, but just stupid dangerous places up in mountains. For no reason of being a girl, no. But you've got to be smart about it. You really do. You don't, like, you learn some of the country's customs. So in Mongolia, as a female, you never look a man in the eye because that's like, hey, baby, let's go. You know, that's what they think. Through all the Muslim countries, I didn't have blonde hair like this. I had long sort of brown hair. And I wore long shirts, so you don't wear singlets. There were a couple of times where I got, well, there's one time when I actually got caught by a checkpoint that was Chinese controlled. And it was quite scary because there were guns involved. I just had guns pointed at me and things like that. And so my thought around that was that I had a buff on and sunglasses, so they couldn't see that I was a girl. Okay, it's one thing having a female voice. It's another one taking your helmet off and having long hair or things like that. So in that situation, I just refused to remove my helmet, and I also refused to get off my bike because the moment you separate from your bike, it's, you know, they've got you. You lose control.
Yeah.
So it's just things like that that you think, okay, I need to be smart about this. Where a guy may not have to think that. But no, look, to be honest, no time did I particularly feel that threatened or scared because I was a girl. If anything, a lot of the times, a lot of the guys are a lot nicer to you.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, they see you're a female out traveling on your own and they want to help you.
Yeah. Awesome. Who is Amy outside of all these amazing adventures on motorcycles? So tell us a little bit about your, normal life. Well, it sounds like adventure is your normal life.
I'm all that exciting. But it's actually about seven days kayaking open water. And all my friends keep telling me there are crocodiles up there. Well, you mentioned there are crocodiles up there. As I said, I don't have to be the fastest swimmer. I just have to swim faster than one person. professionally, I work in environmental management in mining. I've been doing that for a long, long time. Long before I got into motorbikes, that's what I was doing. And when I got into the GS Trophy, I was able to take a break from my career. I was actually looking for a break from my career for a little while. I was a bit tired and a little bit over it. So the GS Trophy and then all that adventure stuff that I did was a great distraction from my normal work. Like I said, when I got back from my trip, I was, who isn't probably a little bit broke at that stage. So I had to pay the ferryman and go back to work. So I work FIFO, actually. So for people who don't know what that is, it's fly in, fly out. So I go out to work for 8 days straight. We work 12-hour days for 8 days. And then I come back to Townsville, which is where I live at the moment, and have 6 days off. And then hit repeat every time. What do? I live literally 100 meters from the beach. So I stand up paddleboard, hang out at the beach. I've got a motorbike, not in Townsville, but at Airlie with one of my friends, the 310 actually. So it's going to come back up here in the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to start, there are loads of adventures I want to start riding again. So, but it'll just be weekend stuff for now until the time is right, until the world hopefully gets back to normal, yeah, and we start traveling again. It's yeah,
for sure. All right, so let's jump into the 7 questions that we ask all of you wonderful ladies that let me interview you. So what was the driving force behind you becoming involved in motorcycling?
I don't know if there was a driving force, it was just a will to do it. I just wanted the adventure. There's a great burning memory in my head that of this woman in GoPro I was riding. She was at Rainbow Beach on, I think, a Honda Dominator, and she was on her own, and there's a totem pole there, and she's standing on a seat with her arms up behind this totem pole, and I looked at her and went, you are the coolest chick I have ever seen. I'll be like you. So I just found some role models and wanted to be them.
That's awesome. Cool. And Rainbow Beach is like my local beach. That's cool.
It's a jump off point for which island?
Fraser,
that's it.
Yeah, cool. What kind of challenges have you faced as a woman, and how have you overcome them in the sport?
Two. Without sounding a bit strange, often I think we are our own challenge. You know, our belief systems in our head that we can't do this or we shouldn't do this. Get rid of that stuff. Just go do it. Just say yes. The thing is, I also won't lie that the sport, particularly as you start getting into competition, so adventure riding as a general isn't chauvinistic. Yeah, you get some casual sexism from guys, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's funny. Once I actually started to compete, that's when I did kind of have to develop a thick skin around some of that sexism and the expectations of, well, I've just ridden all day, but now I've got to go off and get all the guys a beer. I don't think so. And yeah, like there is a bit of that.
Yeah, and you're right, it's two very different worlds, adventure, and as soon as you add competition, it attracts a different kind of person in a way, and they do look at women in the sport slightly different, and not all of them, of course. Not a generalization, but there seems to be more of them. Yeah.
I'd say, you know, in general adventure riding, there's only 5% of guys who are a little bit chauvinistic or, you know, whatever. I'd say there's probably 15-20% in competition.
Yeah.
You know, they love seeing females get out there to a point.
Yeah.
They like it there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's, and I love that you've answered it that way, because in all of the, you know, how long we've spoken before now, you've said nothing but how brilliant everyone is and how wonderful everyone is and everything is, but there's still always that little, you know, nugget in the corner, but it doesn't have to change your whole experience of motorcycling. You don't focus on that little nugget. You look at all the brilliance and all the brilliant people. So that's, yeah, it's happened to you, but you haven't let it change the way you think of motorcycling.
And I'm going to be honest with that, Gemma, like there have been times where I have really questioned what I'm doing because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've wanted to not be there, but yeah, it's like I said, you have to develop a thick skin, I won't lie.
But it's worth it, isn't it?
Yes, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, number 3, what is the greatest gift that the sport has given you?
My best friends. So Kinga Tanafiasco, Julie, the incredible females I've met through this sport, all my friends, you know, well, not all of them, but my real close friends were all adventure people. I look up to Kinga so much. So that, I also, the sport adventure riding has taught me how little I actually need to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need the biggest, latest of everything to go off and have this amazing adventure on a motorbike. Just pack your bike, go.
Bike bikinis, right?
Bike bikinis. That's actually a toothbrush bikinis.
Done. What do you love most about our sport?
The people. Yep. Every day of the week, the people that you meet, you know, riding through the back blocks of Tajikistan or Kazakhstan or somebody like that, and these people pull you over just to say hi. That's worth it every single day of the week. All the uncomfortable, that makes it. So it's definitely the people.
Yeah, wonderful. What life skills have you developed as a result of motorcycling?
Without sounding negative, but that thick skin has really helped me. Yeah. I'm certainly not so naive anymore. To say yes, there you go. That's my life lesson, is just to say yes. If you want to enter something, just put the entry in. The rest will figure itself out to that. You know, what if you're like, oh, should I enter? Should I go? Should I? Just do it. Say yes. Do it after that.
I'm feeling like we're the same person as we go through these questions. If you could write a letter to your 16-year-old self, what message would you give?
Start writing earlier. Don't worry about what your parents say. Just do what you want to do. If you have a passion for it, go do it as soon as you can. And don't let the fear of failure stop you, because you will fail. You will be fearful, but don't let it stop you. Just do it.
Wonderful. And our last question, what is the most popular question you get asked about motorcycling?
It's, was I scared? Was I scared while I was traveling? You know, oh my God, weren't you scared? No, because the world's a beautiful place and people want to see you out there. So, yeah, it's, you know, they sort of say, oh my God, you're brave, or you're so incredible because you went to the GS Trophy. I had to work my ass off for that. Sorry, language. but I had to work really, really hard for all of that. It doesn't come easy. So if you want something, you've got to go get it. It's not going to come to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, the world's a beautiful place.
Well, I think what a way to end this interview. The world is a beautiful place. Thank you so much, Avy. This has been such a wonderful, interesting, inspiring, just cool chat. I hope everyone enjoys it. And I really think we should pull out some of your nuggets of brilliance there and put in a little compilation of highlights, because, yeah, this has been a really wonderful interview and it has been so great talking to you.
Thank you, Gemma. And, again, thank you to the Women's Motorcycling Committee for choosing me. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, and have a great kayak. I hope that no crocs come too close.
Yeah, that's right. I'm hoping I don't get bitten, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Come on, right?
Yes. All right, have fun.
Thanks, Gemma. Thank you. Bye.